In this episode, I give you bite-sized brilliance for your next project. Hello and welcome back to the Project Management Podcast at pm-podcast.com. This is episode number 532 and I'm Cornelius Fichtner. Thank you so much for stopping by. Now, I said this many times, but this time I really mean it. This is a video episode, and you should really watch the video, either at pm-podcast.com/532 or pm-podcast.com/YouTube, because I will be using memes to bring you project management wisdom, and you want to see those memes on the screen. Here is what we are doing. After I publish an interview, I often take the essence of the conversation and I create a meme for it that I share with my followers on social media. And right now, I've picked 7 memes and packed them into this one show here. So, 7 memes for 7 episodes, and for each, I explain the story behind them and use the insights that they impart to help you lead better projects. So, grab a coffee or tea in my place, settle in, and let's turn a good laugh into real results. In episode 502, I spoke with Amire Amir Mazaheri about how PMOs can thrive in the era of digital transformation. Amire runs PMO Solutions and has spent 2 decades guiding Tier 1 delivery organizations, so she knows exactly how to move a PMO from tactical reporting to strategic firepower. The woman yelling at the cat meme nails the gap that Amire and I explored. Many PMOs still churn out status decks, yet modern businesses expect their PMO to be a partner that shapes strategy, fuels change, and speaks C-suite language. Amire's closing challenge was twofold. PMO teams must step up and demonstrate value, while executives must empower them, invite them early, ask better questions, and never spring surprises. My takeaway, however, goes into a different direction. Let's replace this meme here with the galaxy brain meme, showing 4 potential stages of a PMO, from just tracking Gantt charts at the top to leading strategic transformation at the bottom. And while in the interview we do discuss the strategic PMO at the bottom, we have to realize that matching the PMO's altitude to the organization's maturity, that is just as important. A startup drowning in ad hoc tasks may need a Gantt tracking PMO to restore sanity, whereas a mature, regulated enterprise, on the other hand, cannot afford to stop at compliance. It expects value dashboards and portfolio steering. In episode 505, I sat down with Rich Maltzman and Jim Stewart, co-authors of Great Meetings, Build Great Teams, to find out why so many project gatherings feel like productivity black holes. Rich teaches product leadership at a university, Jim coaches agile teams, and both insist that a meeting is simply a micro project and one that deserves real planning, real structure, and real facilitation. In our meme, Gene Wilder's sarcastic grin as Willy Wonka, labeling a meeting as a practical alternative to doing actual work, really sums up a point that Rich hammered home. Most calendar invites, they go out with no stated objective, no agenda, and the wrong people in the room, guaranteeing that an hour of collaboration turns into passive multitasking or open mic tangents. Here are my 2 takeaways. One thing to stop and one thing to start. when meetings are scheduled by reflex, attendees treat them like background noise and Wonka's sarcasm becomes reality. Rich mentions that 92% of people multitask in meetings because they don't see the point. So stop inviting everyone just in case. Instead, force yourself to write a clear outcome first. For example, review the project budget for the third quarter in 30 minutes. Now, you automatically trim the guest list, you sharpen the agenda, and signal respect for everyone's time. Over the duration of your project, that habit frees hours, elevates discussions, and quietly brands you as large and in charge. You know, the facilitator who rescues meetings instead of multiplies them. Next up, episode 511, where I spoke with Barbara Kephart about what is arguably one of the most challenging and critical parts of our jobs, managing project stakeholders. And our meme this time features Bernie Sanders, come project manager, with the caption, "I am once again asking for your honest feedback before we lock scope." I chose this because Barbara's most important takeaway for us was that proactive, direct, and sometimes, repetitive communication isn't just helpful. It's the foundation of project success. Projects, she argues, get derailed by stakeholder issues that often boil down to a lack of trust. She drove home the point that you can't just manage stakeholders from a spreadsheet. You have to actively build relationships and understand what truly motivates them. This meme is funny because it is painfully true. My key lesson from this is that as project managers, our most important job is to be the chief communicator, even when it feels like we're repeating ourselves. The humor comes from that feeling of polite desperation, of knowing the disaster that awaits if you don't get your input right now. And my big takeaway from Barbara's interview is that this persistence is not nagging. It is a strategic necessity. You have to create multiple and clear opportunities for stakeholders to give you feedback, and you must do it with relentless consistency. It is up to us to make it as easy as possible for them to engage. So while we are once again asking, it's because we know that getting that feedback now prevents us from having to deal with a crisis later on. Oh, and instead of nagging, like Bernie Sanders here, schedule feedback checkpoints at the end of every phase gate so that this ask feels like routine and not like nagging. In episode 525, I spoke with Corey Kogan about thriving as an unofficial project manager. Corey shared why so many professionals suddenly find themselves juggling their day job as well as a full-blown project on the side, often with zero formal training. Trust me, this one is worth watching if you have ever felt that uncomfortable tug between today's inbox and tomorrow's Gantt chart. No surprise then that the meme I chose is the classic distracted boyfriend. Our unofficial project manager just can't stop eyeing the shiny new project while my regular job looks offended. That image nails the tension Corey and I unpacked. Accidental project managers are torn between business as usual tasks and suddenly steering a team. We talked about practical fixes like clarifying scope, setting lightweight rituals, and securing real authority so that the project doesn't stay a side hustle. Corey's closing challenge was that you should pause after each milestone, spot one habit that worked and one that flopped, and then refine them before moving on. Here are six things that I took away. First, the moment you inherit a side project, treat it like real work and give it a name, a goal, and a place on the calendar. Second, block structured time every week so that the project stops stealing attention from your core duties at random. Third, translate the big why into everyday language so that stakeholders understand how the work benefits them personally. Fourth, build a lightweight plan with clear milestones. Even a two-column Kanban board beats keeping it all just in your head. Fifth, schedule short communication checkpoints and stick to them, because silence breeds confusion. And finally, sixth, ask your sponsor for explicit mentions. Give me resources, give me authority, or simply public endorsement so that the project that I'm working on is not an afterthought. In episode 495, I spoke with Neil Whitten about elevating these so-called soft skills into the power skills that drive standout project results. Neil, an author and keynote speaker, argues that tools and templates only get you to being average. However, influence, courage, and accountability, they push you past this. If you manage projects but you still struggle to move people, this chat is your recalibration point. And for this one, I'm using the Gru's Evil Plan meme. Identify power skill gaps, commit to daily practice, hold myself accountable, and wait, this is hard. Gru's last frame mirrors the reality that Neil laid bare. Mastering power skills feels simple in a slide deck, but deliberate, repetitive practice soon exposes how tough real leadership is. Neil and I discussed why courage to speak up, self-leadership, and relationship building determine project velocity more than any scheduling wizardry. And in the end, Neil challenged us to pick one power skill, track it for 30 days, and rate your own performance, because the only person who can level up your leadership is staring back at you in the mirror. Neil's point reminded me of what John F. Kennedy said about going to the moon. We don't do these things because they are easy. We do them because they are hard, and because the best project managers are lifelong learners of power skills. I'm giving you Neil's really hard challenge as my takeaway, but I'm making it slightly easier. Therefore, for the next week, and only for the next week, I want you to pick a single power skill where you are struggling. Maybe active listening, negotiating with stakeholders, or concise communication. And at the end of every day, reflect on how well you used it. And I'm pretty sure that come Friday evening, you will know what worked and what needs a little bit of tweaking. And if you can make this a lifelong habit, then these small incremental changes, they will make you an exceptional project manager. In episode 507, I spoke with Wayne Termel about what it really takes to lead remote and hybrid teams. Wayne argues that work from home, that's just logistics, whereas remote leadership, that is something else completely. It is a skill set. So if your calendar is full of video calls, but your team still feels disconnected, then this conversation is going to be a wake-up call. And Morpheus saying, what if I told you that remote leadership isn't just working from home, captures the trap that Wayne and I explored. Too many managers, they think relocating the office to Zoom, that is the target. Instead, we dug into the real work, building trust that you can't measure in hallway chats, designing communication that beats proximity bias, and choosing tech that serves people and not the other way around. Wayne suggests treating every remote interaction as deliberately as you treat a kickoff meeting, with purpose and preparation and clear next steps. Which takes me to my takeaway, a myth, well, a busted myth. Effective remote leadership is more than keeping an eye on your remote employees. True remote leaders manage outcomes, not surveillance data. They define clear results, share progress transparently, and build trust through consistent follow-through rather than constant digital supervision. I don't care if your status in Slack is always green, cameras left on in every call, and how long you take to reply to emails, or how many hours you logged online. Those signals, they may make you look productive, but they don't prove that real progress is happening. So, managing outcomes shifts attention to the tangible results that you agreed on, finished deliverables, they resolved tickets, satisfied customers, or measurable improvements. That's what I'm looking for. When you and I, as leaders, track outcomes instead of optics, then our remote team members, they can focus on meaningful work rather than making sure that they look busy. Finally, we are going all the way back to episode 485, when I sat down with Markus Glowacz to unpack why data literacy is the non-negotiable skill for project managers in an AI-driven world. Markus likens data literacy to a driver's license. Before you connect a shiny AI engine, you better know how to steer, fuel, and maintain the data that drives this vehicle. I have personally taken this to heart, and I've been challenging everyone to become data literate ever since that conversation. Here is the meme. RollSafe, the thinking guy, tapping his temple, knowing that being a data literate project manager is the ultimate skill today. You can't have bad dashboards when your data literate. This street smarts with a wink captures Marcus's central warning. Project managers are both data consumers and data producers. Therefore, garbage data in means garbage insights out. We talked about treating project artifacts as enduring assets, sharing them instead of burying them on SharePoint in a galaxy far, far away. And building a culture where truth outranks cosmetic status lights. But you have to start by forgetting about plug-and-play AI for now. Instead, first, build transparent, high-quality data habits that your future analytics can actually trust. And that means my takeaway from this conversation was you have to become a data-literate project manager. But that's not what I'm going for right now, because it would be too obvious. Instead, it's this question here. Which single dataset in your project would you stake tomorrow's decision on, and what makes it trustworthy. You can just ponder on this yourself or ask your team at the next stand-up. And one potential answer could be, well, it's the sprint burndown chart, because the team updates remaining work every day, we review anomalies in each daily scrum, and we validate the numbers against our definition of done. But if you hesitated, if your team hesitates or mentions a data source that nobody actually audits, then you have found your first literacy gap. Close it and watch this meme come true. Solid data, solid dashboards, smarter calls. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for watching. And I hope you were watching, because otherwise none of these memes make sense. Please visit pm-podcast.com/532 for show notes and transcripts. If you go to pm-podcast.com/pdu, you can learn about how to earn 60 free PDUs with the podcast. And as always, our email address is info@pm-podcast.com. And finally, we have another meme, of course. It is the "this is fine" meme, to be precise, because when your project is going up in flames and everyone is freaking out, sometimes the quickest fire extinguisher is your perfectly timed sense of humor. Until next time.